This episode of Cox Talking Gamecocks is brought to you by the Mason Jar, New York City. The Mason Jar is the official Gamecock bar for the New York City area. Fans and alumni of USC can come by the jar for some great barbecue, cold drinks, and of course, to watch the Gamecocks in any sport, all while surrounded by South Carolina memorabilia. If you want to get a slice of game day in Columbia all while in the Big Apple, head to the Mason Jar on East 30th Street. All right, here we go. Welcome to episode 105 of Cox Talking Gamecocks, brought to you by the Mason Jar, New York City. I am your host, Tim Cox, where I will keep every episode from 1801 to 2001. And, ugh. All right, that's it. That's the show. I'm just screwing with you. But that's sort of the mood this post-game day, I feel like, around Gamecock Nation. A lot of Advil, Gatorade, and sadness. Should be the slogan of Satterfield's offense. Put it right on his resume. But I digress. It's been a tough post game day here for Gamecock Nation. Obviously, I'm going to dive into the recap from the football game. But before I do, there was a lot of action to recap around USC Athletics this weekend. So going to review quickly, starting with Friday. Women's volleyball beat Alabama 3-0. Way to go. Beat the Tide. And then women's basketball went to 17th-ranked Maryland and won 81-56. Zaya Cook with 18 points. Aaliyah Boston with 16 points and 13 rebounds. Also got Bria Beal with 9 points and 8 rebounds. A really impressive early season win for this squad. Just anytime you can beat a ranked team, but beating a ranked team Friday night at their place by, what is that? I'm so bad at math. Like damn near 30 points. My goodness. That is very impressive. And the team had a little edge. I believe it was Camilla Cardoza. Got a little, you know, there was a little tussle. You know, there was a little, almost a little brawl. so that was really exciting to see. The women's next game is Thursday at Clemson, taking on the team in the upstate. In the upstate, time to just kick ass, girls. You know what to do. I ain't sweating it. That'll be fun to watch, though. And then also on Friday, men's basketball beat Clemson 60-58. You'll remember they had the early season rivalry game. Normally, this game takes place later in the year, I believe typically in December. Just an amazing start to the Lamont Paris era. I might start learning French. Lamont Paris got me feeling all Parisian up in here. I mean, being able to beat the team in the upstate in only his second game at Carolina, just is so super impressive. And actually, it was the first time that South Carolina beat Clemson in basketball in several years. I think like 5 years or something like that. I found that very hard to believe, but whatever. This feels extra sweet because of that, especially given that, I mean, you know, Clemson's been decent. They've been pretty consistent at basketball over the years, and it was the last second, literal last second heroics of Chico Carter that got the win. He drilled a mid-range shot looking like Luka, nailed the mid-range shot with less than a second left on the clock. Carolina was up for most of the game, and then Clemson staged a comeback late, tied it up, and then Chico got the ball, and the rest is history. And in fact, he just put himself into the history books for Carolina Athletics. He ended the game with 16 points and 3 assists, and then G.G. Jackson right behind him with 12 points and 8 rebounds. Very, very impressive win. A gutsy, that's a word. Gutsy win, gritty win. It's only been 2 games, but what I've seen from this team is, you know, there's a lot of new faces. You have a lot of freshmen, you got some transfers, and they're not going to be blowing people away. Their first game, SC State, they staged a little bit of a comeback. Clemson staged a little bit of a comeback, but the team didn't fold. You know, this feels like a game that in years past, we might have folded. But the team stood up, they got back up, and they got the wins. So very, very cool to see, and even more fun to be seeing how this Paris era first year turns out. The men's next game is Thursday against Colorado State as part of the Charleston Classic. You'll remember they arranged some, you know, Charleston Classic with a couple other schools. So they'll be playing a few games there over the next weekend. I think it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday or Sunday. So we're not sure exactly who they'll play after Colorado State, but going to be exciting to watch the Charleston Classic. I would imagine a good Gamecock contingent will be in the house, so that's always really cool to see. Well, you'll notice I tried to really, like, hype up those wins. I tried to really get into those wins because it is time to talk about Saturday. But actually, before I get there, quick note. Oh, I got some more good news here. Equestrian beat Georgia 10-9. That's right, we're talking Equestrian. And then the women's soccer. I can't believe I almost forgot them. Oh, my gosh. They advanced to the next round in the NCAA tournament, beat Wake Forest 2-0. Next game will be Friday afternoon against Harvard. Way to go, girls. So cool to see. All right. How about that? A little bit of extra good news before I turn the focus of the show to recapping the football game that happened Saturday afternoon and early evening. So we're just going to get through this together. I got some thoughts on it, and then we're going to try to flush it as best we can. So South Carolina falls to Florida 38-6, and I don't know. I mean, really, like, what is there to say? It was an ass-kicking. The team did not show up ready for a fight. And just from the word go, the Gamecocks were outplayed, simply put. You know, and I mean, going into the game, we all knew it was going to be a challenge to go down there and get the upset, right? I mean, we knew it was going to be a challenge. Underdogs in the game. But I, like many of y'all out there, thought it would be closer, like a more close, back-and-forth type of game. And man, that sure was not the case. And I'm just upset. I am. You know, it was a terrible showing. Borderline embarrassing. Maybe not even borderline, now that I'm saying it. Like, it's embarrassing. You're coming off a game at Vanderbilt where things clicked, and you would think that the team would have come out ready to play, and they just simply did not. A lot of people out there, they're, you know, saying this might be the worst loss of Shane Beamer's early tenure at South Carolina, and it's honestly hard to argue otherwise. And it's crazy because we're like 2 weeks removed from a game where you could have made that argument as well against Missouri. It's been this weird sort of real mixed bag, back half of the schedule. Some highs, but then some really, really low lows. I mean, Florida going into this game, they're a team that they were struggling to find a groove all year. Their defense has been bad all year. Their offense was up and down. And for all intents and purposes, this was a game that should have been there for the taking. But once again, as we've seen this year from Carolina, like, nothing is a given. Well, that's kind of just life of a Gamecock fan. Nothing is given. And usual logic tends to not hold true, period. But with this team specifically, what you think might happen just hasn't really turned out that way. And it feels like unless there's the turnover in our favor at a big moment or something to really shake the opponent off their game, it just hasn't gone according to plan for Carolina. And it's weird. You know, I talked about in my pregame show that I saw a path to victory. It wasn't going to be easy, but I said, you know, Carolina has to check off the boxes. The recipe for success that we've seen this year. Big-time special teams player turnover. I mean, I know we got that touchdown, but I'm going to get into that in a minute. Damage was kind of already done, but there wasn't a big turnover. You know, you didn't start fast. The other team started fast. Like, all these things that all of them have had to go right for Carolina to get the wins this year. And, you know, when that's the case, I think you're seeing what this ball club is, where we got our sixth win, we're bowl eligible. You know, we're not bad, but we're not at that next step. Because in order to get at that next step, like 8+ wins, I mean, shoot, 7 wins, but you have to be able to fight through when your game plan doesn't go right. You know, what was it? Mike Tyson had that saying, everyone has a plan until they get hit in the face. Sometimes it feels like when this team gets hit in the face, they stay in the fight. You know, they'll try to hit you back, but the whole game plan just kind of goes sideways. So that is a concerning trend this year, for sure, and something that I'm sure Shane Beamer is aware of, and he needs to think of how he can correct that, not just in these last two games, but moving forward, like forever. And it all starts at the top, right? Like, how do we prepare? What do we look at? How do we analyze film? How do we analyze film and prepare after we win? I know Carolina had that very nice win streak, and it was capped off with, you know, the Kentucky and A&M wins. But you beat Georgia State in week one. You looked off at Arkansas. And then, yeah, you came off the win at A&M. You had your finally first normal week to prepare for Missouri. You fell short. You beat Vanderbilt. You fall short. It's a weird pattern. Got to figure out what's going on there. But let me dive into what I liked and didn't like for the game. I mean, not like I liked a whole lot. But on the defensive side of the ball, I didn't like the horrible, horrible start to the game. Giving up 21 points in the first quarter and 24 in the first half. My goodness. I mean, for as much shit as the offense has gotten, and rightfully so, the defense has done this before a few times this season where in the blink of an eye, snap your fingers, you're down 2 or 3 touchdowns to start the game, like right out of the gate. And before you know it, South Carolina is in a massive hole to start the game. I mean, how can any team be expected to regularly come back in a position like that? You can't. And I know that we want the offense to start fast and everything, but I mean, seriously, how many times do you score on your first two possessions in a football game? It feels like, you know, not often at all. So, like, yes, you got to find a way to get points on the board quick, but the defense can't give up 14, 21 points in the first 3 or 4 drives. You know, I'm not sure what kind of game planning is going on that side of the building, but it's crazy that this has been a regular occurrence this year. And, like, this late in the year, you know? And this is a game where you couldn't give Florida an inch because we know the type of athletes they have. But if you were able to slow them and throw them off their game early, you could have hung in there. It's almost as if Clayton White, like, needs to physically see what the opposing offense is going to do and, like, effectively beat him in the game plan for him to then adjust. But by the time he does that, it's too late. And I understand that the defense is banged up, yes. And we've had to play multiple young guys in big positions. I get that. But this has happened multiple times this year. And it's unacceptable. You know, I haven't been too critical of the defense because in the games that we won or in big moments, like, they have stepped up. And I think Clayton White is a good coach. I like his system. But this has happened multiple times, and that cannot happen. I also didn't like a lot of the tackling. You know, I had that as a crow to the game to improve tackling, and there were instances where lazy tackling, missed tackles in big spots too. Just not good. I mean, you gave up all the points. Like, I mean, my goodness. Gave up 38 points. Just not good. I mean, if there's anything that I liked, right, if I'm going to say anything, which is hard, I would say in the second half, the defense stood up and they slowed the bleeding. You know, they gave up just two scores. Yeah. In the whole half, one in the third, one in the fourth. But again, by that time, the damage was done. The damage was done after the first quarter. And also, Florida took their foot off the gas late in the game. So, yeah, hard to find something good to say, which brings me to the offense. I'm going to keep it simple for you guys here. What did I like from the offense? Not a damn thing. Period. So what I didn't like, I mean, shoot, where do I begin? Florida's defense was ranked terribly nationally going into the game. And their offense, like our offense, essentially scored 0 points because the only touchdown was on the fake punt. I want to say that again. The offense, pure offense, scored 0 points. Without a miracle touchdown off a fake punt, the offense would have been shut out. In the 10th game of the year, this offense looks completely lost. More lost than ever. And it's just inexplicable that you can have a unit be this disjointed and repeatedly look slow, out of sync, not creative, sloppy, ineffective, whatever adjective you want to use. Inexplicable. 10th game of the year, and you're effectively at the end of year two in this system, right? You have guys who have been there. This is their second go-around. The offensive line, mainly. Josh Van, Jaheim Bell. I mean, I've spoken my piece on Satterfield. I can't rehash that for my blood pressure. But it is abundantly clear that he is holding this offense and the team overall back. He is holding the program back. And I know that once the season ends, he's gone, right? I mean, a lot of people are saying he's going to get fired. Like, we got to get rid of him. Like, his contract was not renewed to start this year for a reason. And it expires, I believe, December 1st. So he's out of here, right? But my goodness, like, something has to be done to get this guy away from control of the offense. I mean, Jaheim Bell had 12 carries as a running back, and the next closest guy had 2. So Satterfield made our tight end RB1. I understand CBS and Lloyd were out, but you have guys like Juju McDowell, Rashad Amos, Dante Miller, Lavoisier Carroll. The list goes on. On the bench. How is that possible? I mean, seriously. How is that possible? Jaheim Bell, a tight end, had 10 more carries than actual running backs. And then he only had 2 catches. Completely backwards. Ass backwards. That's what also be the slogan of Satterfield's offense. I mean, he just way overcorrects, and he ends up doing more damage than had he not done anything. You know, you got to get Jaheim the ball, got to get Jaheim the ball, got to get his touches, got to get his touches. Okay, we're going to make him the running back. I mean, yeah, if he were to get in space and, like, maybe break one, he's hard, but, like, he's not hitting an A gap and, like, you know, finding daylight. It was just effectively halfback dives. And then, like, all that aside, to open the second half with 3 possessions and 3 fumbles is dumbfounding. I mean, I'm an optimist. You know, it takes a lot for me to be, like, really upset about sports, like, after the fact and say, you know, negative things. But, I mean, that's JV stuff. What is that? I don't know if that's a symptom of guys pressing, like they're playing from behind. They feel like they got to make a play, that extra move. But that's just insane. 3 for 3. I mean, there was a little bit of hope there, entering that second half where, like, all right, if we can march down there and get a score and then a stop, like, we could maybe find our way back into this game. Nope. Right away. I mean, there aren't words for how mind-boggling this offense is. You know, you can look back at the season and, you know, when it's all said and done, this is a game where the offense completely no-showed. Threw out any chance of any kind of upset. Keep in mind, the spread was just 8 points. So this game, for all standards, whatever you want to say, this was a toss-up game. And the offense might have made it that we could have come through. You can also look back at the Missouri game, where that was a game where the offense no-showed again and basically killed the chances in what was a very winnable game at home. So you got one, maybe two wins left on the table. And a big part of not having those wins is the failure of this offensive staff to game plan and prepare accordingly. So, I don't know. I mean, overall for this game, I don't know where to go from here. We got two games left, one at home, to rival schools, each of them. And this team has to show fight, you know? I still got the hope, you know, I still got that fire to root for this team. Of course, that's never going away. But the last thing that Shane Beamer can have happen is for his team to lose a little bit of their spirit and roll over these last two games. Now, I don't want to make it seem like that I think that's going to happen. I do not. I don't think that the guys and the leaders in the locker room will allow that to happen. But more so, he needs to talk to his coordinators and have them motivate their units differently. Change up the messaging. And to adjust how they game plan these last two games. Because guess what? It only gets harder from here. With Tennessee and Clemson to end the year. Only gets harder. So, got to change up the messaging. Got to find a way to keep that fire. Keep these guys hungry. Try to get that extra win. Got to scrap and claw and be gritty. It's not going to come easy. That's what these guys need to know. The guys meaning these coordinators. You can have the game plan on paper all you want. The other guys on the other side are making a lot of money as well. They're in the SEC, ACC as well. They know what they're doing. So what do you do when adversity hits? That's the question we are going to find out the answer from these last two games. But I guess on the bright side of things, you know, because I do try to keep it a little light here. Don't forget, we are still going to a bowl game. Hey, I don't care if it's Birmingham or not. Going to a bowl game, a bowl game is a bowl game, as is a bowl game. It's fun. So at a minimum, we do have that to look forward to. We can strive as a team to show another good performance in a bowl game for the national stage, if you will. But at the same time, you know, you want your team to play well at the end of the year to go into that game. You don't want to limp into a bowl game with a couple of bad performances. But I also do want to give a shout out to the man, the legend, Kai Kroger. Rocket arm and rocket leg. The guy can do it all. I mean, that was a great throw. I mean, everyone knew that that was going to be a fake punt, and he's still just on the money. Beautiful throw and catch. Loved it. Shout out DK Joyner, too. That play was fantastic. Soul highlight from the night. But with that, y'all, that wraps up this episode. Sheesh. We got to try to flush it. Please follow me on social media. Twitter is Cox Gamecocks. Instagram is just the name of the show, Cox Talking Gamecocks. Please like, subscribe, and review to the podcast. I appreciate all y'all. Go Cox.